Our fine guest today is Mr. C.K. Hicks. C.K. is a WordPress developer, podcaster, writer, and thinker. He runs his web studio, Creative Kinesis, from any coffee shop in Springfield, Missouri, and is an avid tea connoisseur. Welcome, C.K.
Hey, Wes. It's good to be here.
Thanks so much for coming on. It's a pleasure, for sure. So, really appreciate you sharing your time and wisdom with us. An intro question. How did you get started in the web industry? What got you into this whole thing?
Well, you're going to laugh, but it was just before the turn of the century. It was actually my first website was built in 1999, which I just got in on that little bit of time there. But I love saying that to people because they're like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, it's just a few years ago, you know. But no, I made my first website in Microsoft Word because I found out you could output flat HTML files. And I thought, hey, you know, if I could put some stuff on a page and as we did at the time, you know, we would put it on a tripod account or something or GeoCities or whatever, and you could have people view your information online. And that sort of just snowballed because after that, I kept updating my own little websites and I made up fake businesses and made websites for them. And eventually I showed some stuff I was doing to my dad and he encouraged me. And then I actually got paid to make a website one time and it just kind of snowballed from there.
Very cool. So your dad was influential in getting you started?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was building computers with him when I was about 6 years old, and even before then was shooting photos with him. And he is definitely my chief influence in all places of technology because, you know, he was there spurring us onward, you know, me and my siblings, and anytime we had an interest, he did whatever he could. But because he was in computers, you know, we had them around, and I was famous for grabbing whatever pieces of spare parts that he had laying around and trying to cobble them together and make a workable machine out of them. So, and he still to this day will remind me, I remember when you used to take those piles of computers and try and make workstations. And so I definitely have a lot to owe to him for that interest.
Funny. So what is his background?
He actually has a double major in agriculture.
Really?
Yeah. And then he got his professional networking, like Cisco level certification, and went into he did all kinds of stuff. But I mean, the bulk of what he did was networking. And then he started his own business. And I remember it's 1996. He started his business and ran it out of the basement. And then from there, he sort of just expanded and grew. And now he still runs his own business, but he's actually working another job as well. And because he wanted a little bit of security while he was sort of in between consulting. But he's been doing it as long as I can remember. And again, really one of the main reasons that I have an interest in this stuff at all.
Very cool. That's awesome. So how did you get from the point of just tinkering around with websites and being interested in it to actually start making money from it and doing it for people and getting paid?
Well, yeah, there are still times I wonder about the getting paid thing because, you know, anytime you're involved in working on the web, there are skills that you learn because you found a way to put them to use and build stuff and have fun and to learn and like that. But then eventually you find someone who says, hey, I'd like one of those. And then you figure out, you know, what that's worth and you try and, you know, figure out a way to charge for it. And so it's been a constant learning process the whole time. And I think, you know, all the way back in 99, I was thinking, hey, if I could put this up and people could see it, then if I ever wanted to have, you know, at the time I was doing a lot of video editing, and I thought, hey, I could put my videos up here and maybe someone could find them and, you know, could talk to me about making videos. And so I think the transition has been gradual, but there was definitely a moment, probably 2005, when I first discovered this software called WordPress. And I kind of opened it up and it was really weird and very blue and blue and lots of blue. And if you look at the old versions, it's very blue. And And I kind of scrambled around and tried to figure it out and kind of got the concepts and played with it here and there for years. But then just a few years ago, coming up on 4 years, I went full time as a freelancer and used WordPress exclusively for client work. And I sort of branded myself with that to try and get the people who were using it. And that really helped, because picking a niche really helps focus your efforts so you're not just a general developer, but you can tell people, hey, this is something I specialize in, and there's a lot of people using it, so you have a pretty good market.
Sure. Very cool. So how did you get over the learning curve of like developing with WordPress? Because obviously developing with WordPress is a lot different than just HTML and CSS.
Yeah, I mean, and those are both required components, obviously, but, mm-hmm. you know, you have to know, if you're going to do it seriously, you kind of have to be a decent hand at PHP, and, you know, I had never done any programming of any kind, and so it's kind of like anything else. You know, there are a lot of great classes, and certainly now there's all kinds of stuff out there that can help you learn those skills, but really it's, you know, it was at the time, most of those training resources didn't exist, and so you did a lot of view source and trying to reverse engineer stuff that people had done, and then you build a bunch of stuff and you break things and you wreck a website and you have to start over, and you just try and learn with every iteration until you build something and then it works, and then you go, okay, I'm going to remember that. You copy it into a notepad document or something, and you save that code, and then the next time you start with that one instead, and over time, you know, and I think one thing that I would do differently if I could is I would show it to more people. Like, just, I would email every single person that I could find who was close to that field and be like, does this make sense? Am I doing it, you know, not, I mean, there's really no right way, but am I doing it right? And the more feedback you can get at those early stages, the better, because you desperately need to have other voices of input so you're not just spinning your wheels when you don't know what to do next.
Yeah. So who were your mentors in that stage, and who did you reach out to?
Actually,
people might be familiar with today.
Yeah, I mean, really, I didn't reach out like I should have until really just a couple years ago, and I started paying more attention to who was in the space and emailing other folks and trying to say, you know, be intentional about viewing how they went about things or listening to their podcast if they had one at the, you know, and that certainly has come just incredible amounts of distance since then. And now there's all kinds of audio resources and video tutorials, and we've got stuff like Treehouse and mm-hmm. all these websites that are just great for anybody who wants to pick it up. I think, you know, at the time I just went around and tried to find sites that were using it, and we had a little video community that I spent a lot of time in. And so we would try and put stuff online, and it was kind of like, you know, if you're a bunch of people carrying like big heavy stones and you see someone drop one and you go help them, but you really don't know what to do because you've got your own you're trying to work on. So it's just, you know, there wasn't a lot of direct training as much as it was just sort of trying to figure it out as you go.
Huh. So you didn't actually have kind of guide you through that, somebody that you reached out to when you were completely stuck?
No, I really didn't, and to my, you know, discredit probably, but I've actually never had a formal training in web at all, and, you know, I like I said, that's to my discredit. I wouldn't say do it that way, because there's way too much information now. You have no excuse for not learning stuff, because there's so much out there, and you should seek that. But at the time, there just really wasn't much. And so I never really had a mentor or, you know, or someone that I could talk to about code, because my dad was in networking. And so I quickly sort of outpaced him in the HTML, CSS, and then PHP and on and on and on. And so, you know, you get to a point where it's like, he understands programming, he understands these languages, but he has no clue what I'm doing anymore. And so I would kind of show it to him, and he'd be like, well, it looks like it's not working, you know, and that's about all you can do at that point. So you just, you know, but if you love it and you love figuring stuff out, then it doesn't feel like a big struggle. even though there are days where it is, but, you know, you keep going, you keep trying.
Huh. Cool. What are the biggest challenges that you've faced with freelancing? And like, how long have you actually been doing that now?
I've been a full-time freelancer for about 3.5 years, coming up on 4 pretty soon, actually. And, but I'm not sure exactly when I took my first paying project. I didn't put the dollar on the wall or anything. I probably spent it right away. But as far as coming to age sort of in that was officially 3 to 4 years ago, and actually was the day before I signed my first apartment lease. I had this kind of crummy little, I guess they would call it a .com job. And I was doing some really basic and just really kind of awful HTML CSS work that they were kind of just like, here, make this, you know, and we want this to look like Amazon. And so build it like Amazon. And so that job went from 30 hours to 5. And then with sort of the implied knowledge that, you know, hey, in about 2 weeks, you're not going to be around anymore. And so the day before I signed my apartment, I get this, you know, I get called into the office and told these things. And so I go sign for my apartment and kind of sit down and go, well, how am I going to pay for this? And so I decided that was a good time to leap into the freelance world. And, you know, it's tough. And I have chronicled some of that just to save time here. If anybody wants to read any up on that sometime, it's on my site. You know, you can kind of trace the history, but it was an adventure.
Huh. And so when, before they told you that you were going to be like, oh, were you planning on freelancing at all in your future? Is that something on your radar?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I had an interest in doing it, mostly because the stuff that I wanted to do, I couldn't figure out how to get paid for at this company. And, you know, I would tell them some of the stuff I was interested in, and I'd be like, hey, there's these really cool technologies over here. You know, we should try them. And they'd kind of go, yeah, we kind of want, you know, you to reproduce that Amazon button. And so, you know, I wasn't getting a chance to do that stuff that was really fascinating and that seemed like the next step. And so, you know, actually one of the best things that came out of that job was this, and honestly, you know, really terrible manager called me in one time and said, hey, yeah, it seems like you're really interested in working on your own. So basically, do you want to become a full-time programmer with a language you've never learned before? Or do you want to, you know, just go do your own thing? And I said, well, I don't really see myself becoming a full-time programmer on this brand new language that I don't know, and you'd expect me to, you know, just kind of pick up and do. He goes, okay, well then your job's pretty much going to go away. You know, I mean, that was pretty much how it went. And, but you know, the insight that he provided of, you know, you seem like you really want to go kind of do your own thing. And, again, it wasn't really so much the freedom as it was getting out and getting to use some of the incredible tools that are out there. And just feeling like there was all these opportunities that we weren't taking advantage of. And because they were so stuck in what they were doing, you know, we couldn't use this amazing technology. So that was one of the things that really drove me out into the wilderness and, you know, kind of trying to hack through all the mess of vines and everything out there to find a different path.
So what are the biggest challenges you faced in your freelancing career?
Oh, goodness. I think tracking time is a huge one.
Really?
It is. And there are some great solutions for that now. You know, all these apps and services that you can have. And then you can do things like the Pomodoro stuff where, you know, you work in spurts and then you take a rest and then you work in a spurt and you take a rest. Those are definitely good. As long as you pick one and use it, you know, don't just like bounce from tool to tool, just pick one and use it. But that's been one of the biggest things is tracking time, and not just for the sake of billing, but also for the sake of, you know, if you're working from home, like I was for so long and still am in a way, then, you know, you're at home all day. And if you're single, you live by yourself. So, you know, it's pretty easy to lose track of 4 or 5 hours between breaks and distractions and everything else. So that's been one of the biggest things. And I think if you pick a system and you stick with it, then, you know, you can always get a better system, but start with a system for sure and account for all of those hours, because, you know, any time that you're not working is basically like if you were to show up at a job and then just stand there, and, you know, they're not going to pay you for that. So yeah, eventually that's going to catch up to you, and it does. And that's been, you know, part of the hard lesson, but, that, and then probably, I don't think I used referrals properly. In fact, I know I didn't. I didn't talk to clients that were really pleased with my work in a way that would lend me future referrals. I mean, sometimes they would just offer, you know, they'd be like, hey, you know, you did a great job, we'll tell people, you know. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea, you know. Mm. But that's a huge part of working for yourself. You've got to have something that people can come look at and see what you've done, but then also not be afraid to just talk to the people that you've done work for and say, hey, do you know anybody else who could use these services? Because, you know, usually, hopefully, you're ending these projects on a good note. So why wouldn't you ask them if there's anyone else who would be happy to, you know, like with your service? And so that's been a huge part. And that there's, I could start listing off names and resources of places where I've learned some of that stuff. Cause it is, you know, you learn it as you go, and you hear someone say something and you go, oh, that's a really great idea. And you scribble that down and you try and put it into practice. And then you find someone else and you write that down. And, so, I mean, there's, we could have a whole list of resources if you want on like freelancing business etiquette.
Yeah. Hmm. And going back to your first point, just curious, what time tracking solution do you currently use or have you settled on?
Yeah, right now it kind of depends on the type of project. Because I do a lot of fixed rate stuff right now, I'm not doing as much, you know, okay, here are 12 hours spent doing this and 5 hours spent doing this and four, you know, it's more of a, here's the project bid. And then I track my time personally using, I use OmniFocus for, and then like a bunch of text files to kind of keep track of what I'm doing on a daily basis. So I'm not having to do as much tracking for invoicing purposes because I'm doing these fixed bids. But when I do, I've been using Billings for a long time, and that's been working really well. But I actually just found out that they're switching the way they do their product, and so I may be looking at something like a Harvest or a FreshBooks or something like that sometime soon, because they have, again, the tools that are there now are, you know, I got Billings when I started 3 or 4 years ago, and I haven't looked at many of the other solutions, but I started dinking around with them a couple of weeks ago because I know Billings is kind of going away, so Harvest and FreshBooks both caught my eye, and I may have to give them a try soon.
Sure. Huh. So I've heard about your involvement with the HTML5 reset theme. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how that got started and how that experience has been so far?
Yeah, it's been really, really cool. I first used that theme. So HTML5 reset is it's a WordPress theme. It's also a plain HTML theme, and it's based off of a normalizing principle, a reset instead of a normalize. So a lot of these, like boilerplate and some of these other, you know, Bootstrap, stuff like that, they're based off of normalize, which means they take and they normalize the styles within the browsers as opposed to resetting them to defaults. And so a reset is a much more hardcore way to go about things because you don't really have an option to, you have to start from scratch. It's literally starting from a completely reset style base. So I used that some years ago as a WordPress theme as a way to start playing around with building from the ground up. And then I contacted Tim Murtaugh, who built the theme, and, you know, just kind of like, hey, I really like it. Thanks for what you're doing. Keep it up. And I saw on Twitter a few months ago, he says, hey, I'm kind of not doing as much WordPress development anymore. Does anybody want to run with it? And so I immediately tweeted him back and said, pick me. And he did. And so we quickly developed a little system of, you know, here's access to Git and here's, you know, let me know if you need help with this and things like that. And so I've just kind of been tweaking and updating and refining as we go. And so it's been really, really cool. And I have some really neat plans for the future of that theme. And Tim has a really great handle on sort of the reset process in general. And there's not a lot of people who are doing it the way he is. And he was actually, he actually released HTML5 reset days before the famed HTML5 boilerplate and Twitter Bootstrap and all that kind of stuff. So he got in right before everybody else did. And so it's just neat, you know, to meet people like that.
Yeah, that's really cool. See, you are a networker. You get stuff done. You talk with people. That's so cool to hear about you taking initiative and just saying, yes, I'll do it. And have there been neat things that have come out of that involvement with HTML5 Reset?
Yeah, I mean, it got mentioned on an interview that he was in on the Big Web Show over at 5x5, and he was talking about the different state of the stuff that he was working on, and he brought up the WordPress theme and said, hey, there's this guy, you know, it's kind of under new management, and so he referenced me and some of our discussion that we'd had, and so that was really cool. And, you know, there's been some neat, just, it's been nice because the theme, and this is no fault to Tim, but, you know, the theme, the WordPress version, sat idle for a couple years. And that's a really long time in theme development. And so updating it from a point of 2 years ago, you can kind of bring it, you see people kind of start to get reinvigorated. And I loved watching the star count, you know, or the watchers basically on GitHub actually increase after we had started sort of releasing some new features and telling people we were fixing stuff and things like that. So that's been really cool because I know that there are people who are actively using this, and it has like almost 800 people watching it on GitHub. And so, you know, when we release something, they all get notified and people are using it and we're getting feature requests. And I actually have a small stack of bug fixes I need to go attend to within the next couple days. And so it's nice because it's been a good sort of like it's been good for developing muscle memory.
That's really cool. Can you share any of your future plans with that?
Yeah, I mean it's kind of taking hints from a lot of what he's doing. If you follow his work on Reset, the WordPress version is kind of following suit. But then I've really tried to integrate the Options framework by Devin. I don't remember his last name. Sorry, Devin. He does really, really great work with this Options framework where you can basically build out admin panels. And I've been using that plugin and that framework for years. And so I want to integrate that even tighter with the theme and make it even more seamless. As you know, so basically you install the theme and then you have these beautiful admin panels, but you're still working with a very, very base level theme. So we're trying to figure out how to prioritize meta tags and mobile optimization and things like that, but still give theme creators the options. So if they click a button, then they have all these extra tools to work with, and they can kind of, you know, if you want to add in Twitter cards, then you click a button and then you fill out some information and boom, you got Twitter cards. But if you don't want them, then they shouldn't be weighing down your theme because the whole point of this is a reset. So trying to strike that balance and then also taking cues from, you know, what the WordPress theme team is doing and stuff like that, it's been a challenge, and it's been a really great way to grow. And I think people should keep following it. If you haven't started on GitHub, you should, because we got some neat stuff.
All right. Just curious, how do you find that balance between features and keeping the code lean? How do you make decisions like that?
It's kind of like what I said before. You do a lot of view source and a lot of testing and a lot of breaking stuff until you realize, you know, oh, this optimizes faster in IE9, or this does, you know, this does better in Firefox, but it breaks it in Chrome. And, you know, there are some incredibly helpful people who in this space who are doing just gobs of work in the testing market. You know, you have Luke Wobluski, and we all mispronounce his name. It's okay. You know, Luke, Luke who's has this huge shelf full of devices that he's testing on. And, you know, we're using like software emulators, most of us. And so when he releases something about a specific kind of device testing, everybody listens because he is the guy for figuring that stuff out. And so if you pay attention to the people that are out there, you can learn with the resource and tools you don't have. And in a way, we kind of have unlimited resources because we're all talking and sharing and figuring this stuff out. And so, it you know, you just, it's like, if you want to be involved in this space at all, you have to hang out with other people online, offline, wherever you can find them, and just dialogue about what you're doing, share what you're up to, and don't worry, because we can all view your code, so it's not like there's any secrets. The more that you share, the better off we all are. So I think just that's getting true. The rhythm of that is really, really helpful, and that bolsters the whole community.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have done a good job with that. Just, I even just knowing you personally as a friend, you sharing about just reaching out to big names in our industry and just going right up to them and asking them questions.
I mean, the worst thing they can say is no, right?
I know, exactly. And I struggle with that. I'm relatively new to Twitter and networking, and even though I hate that word, and connecting with other people who I view as more experienced than me and higher up on the web chain than me.
Sure.
But yeah, do you have any advice for people who are, you know, nervous about and who are hesitant about talking and reaching out to people?
I mean, you at some point you just realize that if I never compose and send this email to this person, they never have a chance to say no to me. So if they're busy, they won't answer. Like, that's just the way it is. And, you know, some of these people who are getting hundreds and hundreds of emails a day, you're going to have to make some noise to even get noticed by them. And so, like, you sending an email, if you're as incredibly introverted as I am and you think, oh man, I don't want to bug them, I'll send them two emails in, you know, 2 weeks or something, like, they probably don't even notice you yet. So, you know, you have to stay present. And so if you have someone that you really want to, you know, get feedback from or whatever, first I would instantly reach out to them. Because again, the worst thing they can say is no, or they'll just delete your email. But, you know, figure out what else they do. Figure out if your question has been answered elsewhere. And I would actually do that before you email them, just, you know, to help save them time in case they've already answered your question. But yeah, I mean, like, if they have a podcast, go tune into their podcast now and then. If they write a blog, go see if they're talking about the stuff that you're interested in. Go see who they are retweeting or who they're quoting or, you know, whatever, like the projects they're working on. And if, you know, if you can pick one person or two people that you're really interested in talking with, then go after them, you know, and send them an email, and, you know, don't spam them. But like, you know, if you don't reach out, then you're never going to talk to them just by default. So
true.
Why would Very you, true. You know, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Have you been good at that? Like, since the beginning of your career, did that truth take a while to dawn on you?
I think it took a while to sort of muster up the courage to do, but then when you get an email back from someone, or, and it's going to sound like a little, you know, star crazy or something, but like, when you get an email back from someone that you really, really admire, or you have a ton of respect for, or they did something that you use every day, then there's a connection there that you realize you could have with pretty much anybody, you know, and so then you just say, well, hey, as a personal challenge, I wonder if I could get this person to reply to me, or I wonder if I could ask this question of these five people and get at least two replies or something, you know, and you can, I mean, you can do whatever you got to do to make a game out of it or whatever, if it helps you. But the important thing is that you progress. If you're not progressing, and you're not growing actively in this space, then you are moving backwards, because the whole industry is constantly moving forward, and it is a breakneck speed, and it's impossible to keep up with all of it. So if you have something you're really interested in, or you have someone you really want to talk to, then focus on that and, you know, keep doing what you do, but like, don't get distracted by every little thing that comes along, because you will never keep up with all of it. And so it's okay to kind of pick a direction and then just want to explore that until you have some answers, and then you'll move on to somewhere else. And but I mean, it's, you just got to do it. You just got to go talk to people, and do that locally if you can too. Look around for meetups or, you know, other stuff that might be in your area. Unfortunately, in the town where I live, you know, there's not a whole lot of that. And so you have to do more online. But, you know, even then, if you find someone, yeah, sure, maybe it's not Jeffrey Zeldman, but if you find someone in your town who does something similar to what you do, go have coffee with them. Or at least send them an email and say, hey, we both live in the same town, and, you know, hand, like, high five, you know, that we're both here. Because sometimes, sometimes, those people are the ones who would love to get an email from someone, because they might be in the exact position you are. And so if you... if you reach out, sometimes that they can, you know, reach back, and who knows, they may have contacts that you don't know about. So, you know, it's just, you just got to get to know people, and even introverts can do that, and it can lead you some pretty surprising places.
Sure. That's cool. That's good advice. I wish I had been exposed to that. I wish I'd heard that earlier on, but...
Oh, what do you mean? You're what, like 12? Come on. You got all kinds of time.
Yeah, I know. Shush, I don't want to tell people how old I am.
Really, okay, I'm sorry. He's 13. Yeah.
Gotta be. Yes. I'm 25. 25-year-old. Yes. Yes. So what are some words of wisdom that you could give to passionate people who are just getting started on the web? They really want to learn this. They really want to get into it. They really want to connect with people. But they just don't know where to start, because obviously there's a much, much higher bar to entry, compared to what there used to be.
Sure.
So any resources that you found super helpful, or, immediate things that you would, recommend, advice you'd give?
Oh man, resources. I could literally keep you busy all day. So I think rather than specific resources, because it's going to change, you know, based on what you're interested in, I would say first, as far as resources are concerned, figure out how you learn, and explore spaces where they're releasing content in that style. So as an example, for me, I'm a very, very good auditory learner, and I learn well when I can pick something apart. So if I listen to a podcast, I'm going to remember what people have said better than I will watching a tutorial. But then if someone hands me a file and says, you know, here's how we arrived at solution X, then I can pick apart that file and kind of figure out what they did. So if you understand how you learn, there's so much content out there that you can kind of pick your own, you know, path to whatever it is you're trying to do. And I would say, just consume as much as you possibly can, because the more that you search, you know, let's say you're interested in WordPress, you know, and you know that you need video tutorials, and you're really, really good when you get someone to kind of sit down and work with you. Well, if you don't have anybody to sit down and work with, then go find WordPress video tutorials. There are plenty out there, and watch as much as you can, and then figure out where else people are releasing tutorials like that, and then go consume those, and then go, you know, and you'll see that there are a lot of connections with the people that you probably found within the first few Google results. A lot of those people know each other, and so that's where you can start having fun, because then you go talk to them and you find them on Twitter, you send them an email, you do whatever, and you say, hey, I'm trying to learn, do you have any, you know, any advice, or I have a specific question about this, or I really appreciate what you did here. You know, that stuff will open doors. You'd be surprised. So I first just, go after whatever it is and understand the kind of stuff you're looking for. But maybe even more important than that, and this is where I'm slightly hypocritical, but there's it's worth saying. If you want to do something, you have to pick what you're going after. And maybe it's something simple, like I want to learn how to, I want to learn how to put a new theme in WordPress or whatever. Okay, well then pick that one thing, do it, ship it, finish it, and move on to something else and do something different. Don't try and do 15 of those at once. Don't try and do 15 different versions of that at once. Pick one thing, learn it, ship it. And obviously I'm not saying like master PHP, you know, like that's not a good short-term goal. But pick something that you can do and finish it, because then you'll have momentum carrying into something else, and you'll have an example of something that you finished, so that when you go talk to these people, like you're going to, and you send these emails, that you'll have something to show them and say like, hey, here's something I did. I'm trying to learn how to do this. And they'll see that you're actively learning and doing. And that will also open doors, because people want to know that they're not, you know, if they have two emails in front of them and they can answer one that says, I'm trying to do this and here's what I've built, or the other person that says, wah, I want to learn PHP. Well, who do you think is going to get the answer? So those are just a couple little things in that. And really that is all encompassed within, you know, networking. But it is, it's important. And if you want to do this and you're serious about doing this stuff, then, you know, do what you have to do. Like skip your TV show and write some emails to people or read some extra tutorials or something. Like if you really want this, then you just have to do it.
True. Very true. Going along with that question is, what things do you wish you had known? Do you wish somebody had told you when you started?
You mean like specific to business or?
Specific to just general advice for getting into the web when you were first starting. And even like freelancing, it could be anything, just things that stand out to you.
Oh, man. If you're going to be a freelancer, you need to have a contract for everything you do. Mike Montero, here, I'll start dropping resources now. Mike Montero is someone that you should go and you should either read his book or watch some of the videos he's put out. You need to have a contract if you're going to be working for yourself. Really, if you're going to be working with anybody, but especially if you're working for yourself, you've got to have that. I have been in terribly sticky situations that a contract would have solved before there was a problem. And so, I mean, that's a huge deal. Just like the accounting for your time thing. You know, I wish that I had done a better job of saying, okay, from this time to this time, I'm working on these things. And then maybe sending that to someone and being like, hey, I know this probably bores you, Mom, but, you know, here's what I did today. And having that accountability really helps. So those are big deals. As far as before, I think really just the reaching out to people is huge. It's infectious.
Yeah, it is.
You know, when you start talking to people on Twitter or emailing with them, or, you know, like right now, like we're talking over Skype, you know, I mean, anything that you do, it doesn't have to be like on air published resource on, you know, Mashable or, you know, somewhere like that for it to count. Like a simple conversation with someone can happen anywhere. And if you really want to learn something, go find a guru and try and learn, and then just be voracious in your hunger. I was always just a voracious learner. I always just went out, and if I wanted to learn something, I mean, I could tell you strange stories about books that I got at the library because I was really curious about how, you know, this thing worked or whatever. And I wish that someone had kind of said, okay, now direct all of that into finishing something so that you have something to show for all of that kind of head knowledge. And then when you, because if you don't build up the muscle memory of finishing stuff and shipping things, then you can have all the knowledge in the world, but if you don't ship stuff, then when you go talk to these people and they kind of like look at you like, okay, but what have you built? And you go, well, no. I know how to do all these things. I want to know. And they go, whoa. Like, are you actually going to use the knowledge I give you? Or, you know, I mean, I'm serious. Like, it makes a big difference. And I wish someone would have kind of held my feet to the fire in that way. Because it really impacts the way that people respond to you. And they will give you people. It's easy to get starstruck. The folks that are out there that are doing this at wherever you want to be, whatever it is, you know, whoever your Zeldman is, they are very willing, like 99.999% of the time, they would love to give you a quick bit of advice or to talk with you or to encourage you or, you know, sow into your learning. But you have to show that you're serious about this stuff because there's millions of you. Like there's too many of you to give the time of day. So if you're serious about this, then do it and show that you're doing it and have a way to track that, because that will help you break through. And if you have that hunger, you know, I wish someone would have helped me direct that into just shipping stuff so that, you know, you can build those bridges and make lasting connections.
That's really good advice. That's excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, CK.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Really appreciate all you had to share. Some really, really good advice, really good points. You can find CK on Twitter at CK Hicks. That's CKHICKS. And his personal site is ckhicks.com.